was an exciting day all planned as always, and I had a most unforgettable weekend. Truly, I must, as always, you know, show and tell, tell and share, all of this bit, but I did have such a delightful time. We are having a lot of current visitors in the city from Britain, and I don't know why, but it just happened that I met a very, very wonderful journalist, Mr. Josten, or Josten, you may take your pick, he isn't fussy how you say his name. He writes for one of the larger newspapers in London. He also has written several books, Oh My Country for one, and he is a Czechoslovakian by birth and is now working with obtaining asylum for various types of refugees and a lot, and writes a syndicated column in the newspapers. And his wife also is with the BBC, so you know that she and News Truly really just hit it off. And she's going back and talk all about Tucson because he had never been to America before. Mr. Josten had been. But he's bringing his son, who was 18 years old, and going to Cambridge in the fall on a full, can you believe it, scholarship from the British Petroleum Company. And he was one of the most exciting and engaging young people that I have had the pleasure of talking to for a long, long time. And you know how it goes with newspapers and the media. I was so delighted to have my feelings reaffirmed and confirmed and reassured that swinging London has not gone all Carnaby Street, and that really it was very definitely a minority, much as we have some of the situations right here in the United States. And I felt very flattered that we were able to squire these folks around our big, beautiful city and to take them out to a cowboy steak style who have never had pinto beans and the like. And this is what they wanted. They wanted something, expecting to see the cowboys and Indians riding the plains, you know, just in the stereotyped versions that we have in our minds, so of people and countries. But you know, it's so delightful to have someone coming to your home, and especially unexpectedly when you had decided to clean the oven, for example, and had easy oven off, dripping all over the place and everything. You decide to bring them in and make coffee, you know, and have some cake, and just sit down and get to know each other, because the young boy and his mother had never been in an American home before. And the things that we take so much for granted, having an awareness come back to you, for instance, shopping every day the way they do over there, the refrigerators, the ovens, all of the things that we all take so for granted. And as so many times, as I said before, all you need is a trip overseas to upgrade your patriotism and make you appreciate what this great country really is. And then you have someone come into your home like this and just feel, they said they might just as well have been back in their living room, their drawing room, as they said, 18th century drawing room, literally. They felt right at home because Mr. Josten spent quite a bit of time in Tibet and throughout India, and they had some things in the sitting room reminiscent of the things that we have from the Orient. And then he went into the den and the study and felt right at home, and he said all of his sins were all over the walls with the trophies. And so he felt that way with Bob and his toes of our traveling news. But what a resemblance. And then the lady takes a step in the bathroom and she said, well, we even have our bathrooms painted the same color, Betty, green. And here was a wonderful lady, a lovely English lady, and her son that just hit it off so beautifully with my daughter. They might have been going to school for years and knowing each other. But you know, the world is truly so small, and people are people, and wherever they meet. And it was just such a wonderful evening that we just could barely part company until about 12:30. We finally decided we better let them get back to the hotel because we had to push on to Phoenix yesterday and on to Vegas and California, and the time was so limited. But they were so darling, and they called bright and early yesterday morning about 8 o'clock saying how wonderful it had been to share another American's home in a few hours with them in the evening. You know, this is living. This is truly living. And I challenge you, if you have the opportunity, never mind if you're washing the floors or hanging out the wash or cleaning the oven, drop it all and bring them into your home and live a little, because people are really wonderful. And that's the secret of life, just visiting. So you're going to meet a lady that has done so many exciting things in just a minute. But for now, let's listen to our song from our Broadway show of the week. And as Mom says now, FCC is going to cut us off the air, Betty. You're playing your dirty shows again, you know. But it is a Broadway musical, and it's Irma LaGouche that opened in New York back in 1960, September 29th exactly, at the Peter Brooks production of LaGouche. So let's get underway with the overture, shall we? It's sort of always, Ray Osborne needs no introduction. The wonderful world of books at Steinheimer's. And he says, I'm the only person that would really put up with you, Betty. So that's why, you know, don't say it, Ray, because I'll put it right on the air in front of all the 150 cattle in USA, say, you know. But I know how much people love to hear you. And in fact, my own dear mother just wrote last week, back from Kentucky again. She's all settled back in her little nest, and she said, you know, I really miss those Monday book reviews with Ray Osborne. Tell him how much I enjoy them. And people say this all the time, Ray.
Please write
so
and say thank you.
I will please do that, all right? But you brought another wonderful guest today.
I think that we are so fortunate in Tucson, and I sometimes think we don't really pay enough attention to the truly great talent we have here. Last week we did. We had Mrs. Tanner, and
she's so wonderful.
No one can
wonderful
quibble about her tremendous talent. And now I have a young woman, and I'm saying young woman deliberately, who has been a friend of mine for years, and I'm very, very proud of her new book, if I may be, Constance Helmrich, and her new book, Down the Wild River North.
And she's no stranger to the people in Tucson.
I should think so, with all her Arctic travel books, her Alaskan travel books. And if I may say so, Connie, I sort of feel this is the best. Or maybe just because it's the newest.
The best of the books?
The
oh,
best
thank
of
you.
The books. Well, welcome to the program. We're delighted to have you. And as Ray says, I was just full of the Dostons from London. He's just full of his trip up the Peace River over the weekend. See how we're going in different directions.
I was saying earlier, I called Connie last week and said, I just had the most fabulous weekend, the most glorious trip up the Peace River. And Connie, I think you ought to identify both and Mackenzie better than I.
I've run into this already, that people seem to think I'm riding up the down staircase because I have called the book Down the Wild River North. The people say, oh, that's a very clever title. Well, the thing is that the rivers run north, and we are going down the rivers toward the Arctic Ocean, and so we go down the river north. But people don't understand this unless they have paddled a canoe in a river. It makes quite a difference whether you're going up the current or down the current.
You speak firsthand on that, thank you.
You want to slow down the current.
Yes.
Well, one of the things, Connie, that you were telling us earlier, and I think that the audience would really appreciate, the very fact that a woman, and I'll call you down on this, you rather downgrade yourself throughout the book as being an old lady, and I doubt that she can be called an old lady.
No, she's a tall,
stout,
redhead, isn't she, Ray, for the benefit of
number
our
one old lady don't get in canoes and start going down the river north.
No.
But I think one of the things you were telling us that's so exciting, and you can repeat it, about the fact that you were the first to do such a thing.
Oh, we think so. I think that my 12-year-old daughter and 14-and-a-half-year-old daughter and myself are probably the only woman and small daughters to get into a canoe and go 2 years through the wilderness of Canada to the Arctic Ocean.
Absolutely, here we are back to the statement of Ray. You wouldn't be an old woman striking out with two young daughters at these ages to explore the wilds and to do something that had never been done before if you weren't an adventurous spirit and young at heart in more ways than one. Right.
Tell us some of the fun things that happened. And by fun things, they're all mentioned in the book, but I think the outstanding things that happened.
The first trip, you'd like to know really where we went. We started in British Columbia. I think everyone has an idea where that is. On the Peace River, which is as large as the Missouri River, it's enormous, and with a fast current of 16 miles an hour, we had a 20-foot freight canoe, and we went down the Peace River all summer, 600 miles, including a tent fire and an emergency appendectomy at a small hospital.
Really?
The first summer. Then down through the end of Lake Athabasca, which is enormous, down the Slave River, which is 5 miles wide in places, with islands as large as 100 city blocks in it, and eventually to Great Slave Lake, which is the size of Lake Ontario. Then a means was found to hitch a ride on a large tug and barge outfit across that lake, ending our summer at Yellowknife on the north shore of Great Slave Lake.
Frank, how in the world, whatever prompted you to take a trip like this?
I saw these rivers from our small airplane years ago before the children were born. And never having been down into the north in this particular way before, I thought to myself at that time that I would never rest until I did it. I never dreamed I'd have the joy of taking my own children on such a trip.
And you didn't worry too much at all. You must have thought only positively and aggressively, I'm going to pack up and go, right?
You know, well, what I worried about mainly was to organize the expedition, get the right type of boat, and also the financial part of it. I was aware that this expedition would take 2 years as I planned it. We needed financing. And my publishers at last provided the means for this trip. And to them goes great credit, because I believe it's the first time in publishing history that a publisher has financed an expedition in a canoe of such duration for a mother and two children.
I think they must have seen, you know, the writing on the wall, so to speak, though, that you being the type of individual that you are would come back with something that was just great, that they would be proud to publish, I'm sure.
Well, then, of course, there's the problem of school for the children, and of course, it freezes up in the north in the wintertime, too, and there is no canoeing during the winter, believe me. So our canoe was put into a warehouse on the north shore of Great Slave Lake, courtesy of the Hudson's Bay Company. It was stored there for the winter. We came back to Tucson, and the children continued in school, and we're entering Tucson High School very shortly. And then the second summer, we rejoined our canoe on Great Slave Lake, traveled 250 miles along that north shore by ourselves in very wild country, found the source of the Great Mackenzie River at the end of Great Slave Lake. And you know, the Mackenzie River was 20 miles across where it left Great Slave Lake, according to our river charts. We went down the Mackenzie 1,000 miles then the second summer, also seeing Great Bear Lake, 90 miles up the Great Bear River for a side trip, and finally reached the Arctic Ocean. There we took airlines back to civilization, and that was the end of the expedition, a two-summer voyage.
I'm interested in clothing and food. What did you eat most of the time that you were gone?
Cans of food.
Cans of food.
Can openers.
Yes, but you couldn't carry too much weight like this, you know, could you?
Well, now, Betty, you see, there are airfields scattered in the north.
Supplies, really?
The trading posts at the villages are about 150 miles apart. The farthest apart anyone was 410 miles. That was our farthest run at one time.
But did you fish and hunt at all with the girls?
There were laws to protect the game from the people.
Oh.
And we had rifles along with ammunition for 2 years if necessary, in case our canoes would get away when we were asleep in the tent some night and perhaps leave us stranded. We were always equipped for survival in the wilderness, but we did not fire our rifles at any game. We didn't have to.
Isn't that incredible? My goodness.
One could never go into the wilderness without protection, of course, but we're conservationists. I could say this after many years as a hunter of game. The earth now can't keep on the way we were going, if we want to have anything left.
Don't you mean are going?
We are going.
Yeah, one of the things I was particularly fascinated with, Connie, was the development of these two young girls who were not even teenagers, really, at the very beginning. And their outlook and their... I mean, how delighted you were they suddenly forgot about hair curlers or lipstick or nail polish and were just sort of developing and growing, and I think...
Well, that would be easy to do, Ray, just on trip up to Mount Lemon. You can forget that in a minute.
Well,
with 2 years, Chris, I mean, that's...
Yeah, little girls, even in junior high school, are acculturated to our culture naturally, and there is a great emphasis, perhaps an overemphasis, on personal grooming and makeup at a very early age, so that childhood really is destroyed by such a culture. This I feel seriously.
I believe
so.
So
we started out with hair curlers. Yes, we had these things in the canoe, but nature imposes its own way of life, and I tell you truly, the days that we did not use the hair curlers
at all. No.
There were days of mud, rain, bugs, mosquito head nets, and just using the can openers to open the cans of beans.
And happy to be alive. And
happy to be alive out there under the sky. And we met many wonderful people, Indians largely.
This is what I was thinking.
North of 55 degrees, most people have Indian blood, at least part blood. And I should tell you that this country of the Northwest Territories of Canada comprises 40% of Canada's total area. And the statistics tell us that there's only one person for every 400 square miles. That's a pretty big country.
It certainly is. Wide open.
And most of those people are in villages. So you have tens of thousands of square miles with nobody in it. But the birds singing and the ferns growing and...
Nature at its most beautiful, probably, really.
Is Canada doing anything to protect it?
Well, they can't patrol it successfully, Ray. The native people, of course, poach game right and left because the warden can't be behind every bush.
Well, that's fine as long as they're eating. I mean, this is
We still feel it isn't so fine because whether they eat it or not, the animal isn't going to be there next year. And if you have too many people eating all of the time, they will deplete their own game preserves. And this the Indians are doing. They're in a poverty-ridden state today. They're much worse off than they were 20 years ago.
I was interested also in that emergency act conducting that you mentioned, Connie. Maybe you could bring that up a little bit in detail.
My younger daughter, Anne, was stricken with appendix when we were visiting in an American home, believe it or not, in Fort Vermilion, with the only surgeon of perhaps 50,000 square miles living right down the dirt street, 2 blocks away. So she was rushed into the little hospital run by the nuns, and an appendectomy was performed properly, and she was on her feet again in a short while. But she had an infection that developed, a secondary problem, and actually Annie, the younger girl, flew the last part of the journey into Yellowknife that first summer. And Jean and I, the older girl, she was 14 and a half, continued. Alone, the two of us in the community that first summer. Then we joined Anne, where she lived at a hotel. A very wonderful thing happened. People reading about our adventure in the large newspaper in Edmonton, Canada, telephoned me at my hotel and offered to fly my little daughter to Yellowknife, where the miners and the business people would take care of her in the hotel, all expenses paid. I didn't take the expenses, but I did take him up on his suggestion and put Anne on the airplane, and there she convalesced and waited for us. They have a nice little clinic with medical care in Yellowknife. Yellowknife is a gold camp, population 4,000. With a school district number one.
Wonderful. Oh, dear.
So, Anne, age 12 was the first in our family to see Yellowknife on the North Shore of Great Slave Lake, and to live there a full month before Jean and I could arrive.
Tell me, knowing now what you didn't know, that you were going into all this in such detail, would you do it all over again, take the girls at this age and go?
Yes, but I would like a new river.
In fact, you're probably looking for one right now. And how about the girls? Are they just as eager?
They are. You know, the word acculturation. When we become accustomed and learn of what is available in the world and the many wonderful things that there are, we develop an appetite for them by exposure. We ended, all of us, I might add, from that two-year trip, stronger physically and better off than we ever were before in every way, stimulated by the experience and the outdoors life.
It was rather interesting, was it Jean or you who had the allergies that sort of disappeared?
Jean had allergies when she was young, and in the clear air up there, nobody ever caught a cold. We were so very well. But when we came back to Tucson, I'm sorry, but a little air pollution is creeping over here, even if all over America. And allergies and virus infections struck us.
Well, I'm sorry, but I know I have the doctors and everybody else calling me mass and probably letters written in what I'm going to say next, but allergies are believed by many to be almost a man-made type of thing.
Oh, there's no doubt about
this is what I believe. I'm fine. This is
the air that we breathe.
Well, this is a living example of it having cleared up in the open.
Oh, yes, I've seen it time and again because, you see, I lived 12 years north of the Arctic Circle before the children were born, you know.
We had this Cuban
too. I know.
When we went to the Orient, many children, service personnel, had allergies before they left the States. But when they went in an entirely different area and where they snow 7 and 8 months out of the year, like I've mentioned before in Hokkaido, they lost these allergies completely. So, I mean, it's a way of life, a way of... It definitely is. And I know from experience also, it's... There's nothing like travel, as you say, nothing.
There's almost no place we can go anymore except the open ocean for people who have allergies, or into the Antarctic or the Arctic region. So what are we going to do with the rest of the world? Are we going to go on in this way?
We have to live with it. Ron just has to take a station break, so let's take a moment. And we do have other guests, so let's move right along. You're going with the Indians and the nature that lose your allergy, right?
Right.
Oh, well, probably has something else, though.
Yes, you will.
The world is not perfect.
She's right. I know people that come to Tucson with one thing and lose that and get something else. So it's everywhere. It's anywhere.
It was interesting, really, in your book, kind of the meanness of nature and recognizing the viciousness of nature, as opposed to the viciousness of man.
Can I interrupt you?
Yes, I want you to.
It's true, nature can be vicious and cruel beyond words. But there is a morality somehow to nature because it's impersonal, and when man is cruel and vicious, perhaps he is morally accountable for his actions, and that's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
He should know better.
That's beautiful. He's the highest form of animal, right? And with that brain, he should use it accordingly, but I don't think we all do.
To develop his moral nature.
This is rather like my almost gloating and kind of critical column, I suppose. But at a big storm or a tornado or something, I sometimes think that nature is telling us,
that's
fine, invent your bombs, do what you will. But I'm still the master.
This is true. I think so, too.
And will be always.
And you probably believe this, too, don't you, Anne?
I'm Connie.
I'm sorry. I'm talking about your daughter, Anne. Sorry.
But
Well, I can refer to all, see, Planet of the Apes. It's a wonderful satire on how the chief ape says that God made ape in his own image and gave the planet to him with the lesser species to rule as he pleases. There's a thought in that. I think that we should become morally responsible if we are going to rule the planet, or we won't have any Earth home left. We will go on and destroy it, as Einstein said we might.
Well, I'm not surprised at that, at least I don't, but read the book or otherwise, I still think that man will be his own unending. I've always believed this. So again, I'll probably get some more letters. This is one of these things, you know, Ray and his guests and his books always bring out these things that you believe. I don't think it's the worst. Sometimes I think it's the best that's in it. Right. I was going to say, I think you'll have to come back another day. We've hardly touched on the book, but we've gone into all sorts of side directions.
You might call it the philosophy of a naturalist who loves nature.
But, you know, one of the things I was impressed with, Connie, in here, fine, you're a conservationist of the first quality, and I can qualify that by, you don't honestly hate people as...
Well, I hope not.
So many,
no.
I mean, some are wild and fun.
Some people do, but too much off the deep end.
Go off the deep end, which you certainly have not.
She's kept an
appreciation. And an insistence, but a very quiet, calm, measured insistence that this is an area in our lives that either we keep it or we're in serious trouble.
I was also pleased, Ray, that the book was not classed as a children's book by the critics. It's definitely an adult book, although the children are the theme mm-hmm. of the story. As you said, how they grow and develop in a canoe.
Mm-hmm.
Not only for a month, but for two consecutive summers in the same canoe. The canoe was named, by the way, after the girl, the Jeannie Ann.
Yes.
Well, you know, I'll just let you know, you're going to wow on me and see this too, Connie, that their whole lives will be colored by this one trip, the first one, the way they developed and the way they grew because of those experiences. They'll be guided by things that have happened throughout their lives. You can't help but have this happen. It's such an outstanding experience.
Can I briefly mention, speaking of this experience for the girls, the coming up experience for the girls?
I guess
so.
It's terribly exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing the telling, Connie, not me.
Well, I'll go to Australia for a year or two on another expedition.
How
From Los Angeles on a freighter, August the
10th. This is something that I have always wanted to do, another book, but taking a train steamer or a freighter, I think this would be so exciting. This I'd like to do. I'd like to be in the pocket with the girls.
Yeah, I think it's particularly interesting the totally different atmosphere and country that we're going from, from the wilderness of northern Canada into the Arctic Circle. And then down into the
oriented toward a story about the water again, the shores of Australia.
Oh, rather than deserts.
To the water, and canoes.
I've done an aviation book too when we had airplanes on seas and floats. That took 4 years, and I've done two canoe trips in books. And two books about the Eskimos oriented to the dog sled. So I never had the saltwater experience, and we're looking forward to
it. We're going
to
go get it. I'm not jealous of anyone in the world. Ray, I wish her only Godspeed and good health and happiness with her girls and just wish that I might share it. But
thank
when you come back, I know that you'll come in, and if the good Lord's willing, I'll be here and you'll share that trip
and
that book with us.
Now, and the elections on people we have all here and expect to be here.